Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So here's a bit of a problem that political reporters have to contend with sometimes. How should we handle stories that might seem like distractions from what most of us regard as the important issues of the day, like taxes, debt, education, and health care, when a particular campaign or a political party fans the flames of one of those sidebar stories in an effort to keep a controversy alive? What should we do?
The story about Elizabeth Warren's claims of Native American ancestry presents one of those challenges. The Harvard law professor, who's challenging Senator Scott Brown, has talked proudly about her Indian heritage. But the story has become complicated. We've learned that she's listed herself as a minority for nearly a decade in the late 80s to early 90s. Warren has tried to explain why, and there's no evidence that Harvard or any other university hired her because of that claim.
The story is providing lots of fuel for the Scott Brown campaign. Just a couple of days ago, it sent out a fundraising email suggesting that Warren has not told the truth. Now, there's no evidence of that either, but the story lives on, which brings us back to our problem. How should we deal with it? Well, we decided to spend a bit of time today looking at what it means to claim Indian heritage in 2012. Turns out that it's not straightforward. But first, let's sort out, just for a few minutes, what we actually know about this story from what we don't know and what it says about both Warren and Brown. And to help us do that, joining us now from Washington, D.C. is David Catanese. He's a reporter for Politico.com. And David, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Let's start right at the beginning. Quickly, let's just lay out a couple of the facts. How did this story come to light in the first place?
Well, it came to light basically due to what Elizabeth Warren was claiming to have had Native American heritage, she was listed as claiming that way back in her professorship at Harvard Law. She then was asked about this, and she made a quick statement and said, yes, she was, but she never put out any evidence supporting this claim. Now, this sort of snowballed because more evidence started to come back that she listed herself as a minority. And the question here, you know, wasn't really, Republicans say, about her credentials to be a professor anywhere. It was, did she list herself as a minority to help gain employment? The reason this story blew up last week is because last week there was more information that came out. There was a cookbook that was edited by Warren's family cousin that claimed that she was Cherokee. This was way back in 1984. Now, again, so far, she hasn't produced any documents to show her Native American heritage. She's basically said, you know, it's a small portion of who she is.
I think she said what? She said that she's 1/32nd.
1/32nd.
And David, in terms of the claim that is being raised by her critics, I mean, that is the claim on the part of her critics that she might have benefited from this in some way. There's no evidence of that, is there?
Right. There's no evidence of that, that she benefited from that. But the question is, why claim it? Why claim it in your employment status? Why claim it anywhere, really? Now, the campaign is saying it's part of her history and part of who she is, but they're not commenting much more on it. And the issue here is whether there's really any proof to the claim. That is now sort of what has become the big question in the campaign, and what Brown and the Republicans are pushing. Okay, you say you are of Indian heritage, you are a member of the Cherokee. How do you prove that? And she just, you know, basically her campaign has said, look, she's a proud member of this, but this isn't really an issue. Let's talk about Wall Street and the economy.
Sure. And David, isn't one of the issues to, isn't it important to tease out what she has said versus what some colleges and universities have said about her? For example, a 1997 Fordham Law Review described Warren as Harvard Law School's first woman of color. Elizabeth Warren didn't say that. The Fordham Law Review said that, presumably from information provided to them from Harvard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's but you know, in campaigns, these things are all, you know, basically parts of a body of evidence to create a narrative, right? It's not about one piece or the other. When a campaign's trying to make a point, they're trying to frame a narrative saying, is she who she says she is? Is she fairly representing herself? And I think the issue right now is that her campaign has shut down speaking about it while new details continue to emerge.
Well, let's listen to we did ask Elizabeth Warren to come on the show to talk about this. The campaign said she was not available today. Let's listen to one of her answers on this issue. Here's what she said about why she listed herself as an American Indian in the Association of American Law Schools from 1986 to 1995. This is what she said.
And I listed myself in the directory in the hopes that it might mean that I would be invited to a luncheon, a group, something that might happen with people who are like I am. Nothing like that ever happened. That was clearly not the use for it, and so I stopped checking it off.
So, David, clearly this becomes sort of a political story that is sort of run as much by her response to it as it is by the sort of the facts of the story. You wrote a column on Politico that said how Warren fumbled her first controversy. What did she do wrong here?
Well, it seemed like they were stonewalling and said, we're not going to talk about it. This is, you know, a distraction. The answers got shorter and shorter. And, you know, they didn't want to answer more questions, and I think that's always a sign of a campaign in a defensive posture. I think more recently the issue is even some of her own allies are now saying, look, come out and talk. I mean, you had liberal talk show host Ed Schultz, you know, recently just come out and say, look, this is a distraction, but hold a press conference. Come out and answer all the questions that are swirling in the media right now.
That's sort of the primary rule of damage control in the political arena, isn't it?
Right.
Sort of put everything out on the table.
Put everything out on the table. And if you made a mistake, if there's a statement in the past that you slipped up on, say we made a mistake and then move on. And then we can sort of focus on the issues at hand that, you know, that she wants to talk about. The problem is her message. She's trying to punch through, saying, you know, talking about Wall Street, talking about some of the things in the current news, and they're not punching through in the important media outlets in the Bay State because this is still hanging over her head. And, you know, when you have your own supporters, your own, you know, liberal brethren saying, you know, get this out in the open and deal with it in a transparent way.
Yep.
You know, that's your own people saying it. That's,
David
that's
Kennedy,
not...
stand by. I want to just encourage our listeners to join this conversation. We're talking about the story that has plagued the Warren campaign all this month, whether or not she benefited from claiming Native American heritage. Do you think this story is a legitimate election issue or is it a distraction? Give us a call. Join the conversation. 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Let me bring another perspective into this conversation. Kevin Noble Millard is an associate professor. I'm sorry, Mullard is an associate professor of law at Syracuse University. He's also from Warren's home state of Oklahoma. He's also a member of the Seminole Nation. He's co-editor of the forthcoming book, Loving versus Virginia in a Post-Racial World, Rethinking Race, Sex, and Marriage, and joins us from a studio in New York City. And Kevin Mullard, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Anthony.
So we're really interested in talking to you because, like Elizabeth Warren, you're from Oklahoma. You are a member of an Indian tribe. So, you know, one of the questions, how common is it for someone like Elizabeth Warren to claim Indian heritage in Oklahoma?
Well, anyone that has been in Oklahoma their family's been in Oklahoma for more than, say, two or three generations, almost every single one of those people has some type of Native ancestry. So you could walk down the street in Tulsa, in Oklahoma City, or Lawton, and ask someone, do you have any Native ancestry? And most everyone will say yes. And most commonly, it would be through a grandmother. So everyone always says, like Elizabeth Warren says, it's through my Cherokee grandmother. So it's this phenomenon that you could call what I've called in past writings before, which I've called the Indian princess phenomena, where it's never a grandfather. It's never someone that is closely related, but it's always like a great grandmother. So everyone has some type of ancestry that's anywhere from 132nd to 116th.
And
so it's quite common.
Right. So it's quite common. And typically, how would someone prove that? I mean, would it be accepted, for example, in Oklahoma if you just said it? Or would someone say, show me the papers? I don't believe you.
Well, think about any holiday that would occur even in Boston,
yeah,
right? You'd have your St. Patrick's Day parade. All of those people that are in attendance at the St. Patrick's Day parade, are you requiring those people to show proof of Irish ancestry, to show that whoever it was, their grandparent or their ancestor actually came over from Ireland? No, you're going to accept that that is what they're saying because that's what their parents told them. That's what their grandmother told them. That's how they're received in their own community. So when you have this own self-identity, usually you don't have to walk around with a card that proves that you are who you say you are. For tribal membership, it's a different thing, right? Mm. If she's going to apply for membership within the tribe, she's going to have to go through a very long process. It's not something like McDonald's where you go through a drive-through and you say, oh, look, here's my membership card, or here's a Bible from, you know, my aunt that says that I'm Native, but it would be more of an involved process. So if she has ancestry, like lots of people in Oklahoma, they do have ancestry, but not everyone is a member. And it doesn't say that those claims are invalid. It's mm-hmm. just whether people have done anything to enroll within a tribe because of their ancestry.
Let me ask you this, too, and this is a little touchy. I want to be careful how I ask it, but it's sort of on everybody's mind. I think in certain parts of the country, when someone claims to have Indian ancestry but doesn't look like an Indian, there's immediate suspicion. You know, there's immediate sort of cynicism about it. Elizabeth Warren, fair skin, fair hair. She says, I'm part Cherokee. What's your response to that, or how do we make sense of that?
The vast majority of people that are members of Indian tribes are of mixed blood, especially in the Cherokee Nation, where you would have a great history of intermarriage, intermixture with European Americans and Native women. You would have a lot of people that would be considered to look whiter. In my own tribe, in the Seminole Nation, it goes the other way, where there would be a considerable number of intermixture with African Americans. Mm. So the modern Indian Nation, it's a wide variety of phenotypes. It's the ways that people look. It's not your own. It's not a single way of looking that is tan skin, long ponytail, people wearing feathers. And that is the cultural expectation of what it means to be Native.
Sure.
For example, there is an old photographer by the name of Edward Curtis, and pretty much anyone has seen these sepia-toned photographs of, it's called the Vanishing Race, and it's of these Natives that are on horseback and they're riding away from the camera, and it's kind of out of focus. And this was taken in 1930, and Edward Curtis had to tell these people, can you put on this wig? Can you put this feather in your hair? Because he wanted the photograph to look more authentic to the people that would be viewing this. And this would be available in the National Museum. This would be available in the American Indian Museum in New York, because there's this very narrow way of looking. And it doesn't include in people's minds when they think about, oh, this is what it means to be Navajo. They're not imagining someone that looks like Britney Spears or
sure.
someone that looks like Heather Locklear. They're imagining someone that looks like Pocahontas.
And Kevin Millard, finally, before we go to some callers and bring David back into the conversation, I wanted sort of your overall take on this story. Valid campaign issue, or has it been drummed up by the likes of me, I guess, and the likes of David? What's your view of this?
I wouldn't say that it's a valid campaign issue. It would definitely be something that's distracting, and it's something that the Brown campaign, I think, would be well within their own ability to ask questions about. But it does take away from the real issues of tax reform, of getting people jobs, of what the economy would be. Instead, it draws this attention to what are the boundaries of race, which I'm imagining that they didn't set up as part of their platform, right? Scott Brown gets up there and says, I want to make this a campaign about racial identity. No, they don't mean to do that. But it does create this entire other discussion. You know, people are writing about it. I wrote about this in the New York Times. You're discussing it on your radio program. David is writing about this on Politico, where it does create this amazing discussion, which I think is very much needed, about what are these boundaries. But we have Elizabeth Warren, who has every right to say who she is. And then Harvard, if we're going to say that Harvard was Elizabeth Warren pulled a fast one over on Harvard. That is incredibly naive on our parts, right? Because we are saying that Harvard Law School, who are supposedly some of the smartest legal minds in the country and in the world, they can't tell when someone is misrepresenting themselves. No, right? But then people at institutions, at universities, are going to be able to portray their institution in the way that they want. The faculty within that institution is going to represent themselves the way that they want. And the Brown campaign is now using this as a way to talk about something that is not necessarily an issue that will ever come into fruition on the Senate floor.
Well, it's so also talking about something, David Catanese, let me bring you back in, and that is, it seems like we're talking about things that are almost impossible to resolve. And yet, obviously, it serves the Brown campaign quite well to keep talking about it.
Sure. And, you know, there's been some geologists that have come forward, though, and said that they can't figure out. There's no evidence to indicate that she's Cherokee. That headline is very tough for the Warren campaign when you now have people trying to dig into this and prove it one way or the other. They say, you know, her family's found nowhere among the Cherokee records. There's no pictures. But again, the Warren campaign, I think one of the central questions is, you know, would the Warren campaign allow Harvard or the other school that she's worked for to release the documents to be able to prove or not whether she did check the box saying she was a minority? I mean, almost there's almost a separate issue here about whether she is Cherokee, one, but the second issue is, did she claim it? And implicitly, you know, her critics would say, try to use it towards employment. And I think that's almost the issue that the Republicans want to sting her with, because then it looks like, as far as in the political context goes, it looks like, hey, here's someone who was trying to use the system, and, you know, someone who's won, you know, 32nd, you know, a small portion was trying to use that to advance her own career. I mean, they say pretty upfront that they don't question her qualifications.
Right, but David, on that point, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I think a couple of her former folks who have hired her here and there at Harvard and other schools have come forward and said pretty clearly that her Indian ancestry did not play any role in her hiring whatsoever.
Right, but that doesn't really matter whether they used it. It's whether what she did.
Yeah.
It's really on her. I mean, I know that they've come forward and said it. Look, we haven't. That wasn't even a part of it. She was qualified. I think it's more about whether she claimed it on the form.
But even if she did claim that, I think there's a negative assumption there that anyone with any Native ancestry, if they claim it at all, is automatically getting a job that they shouldn't be getting. And I think that's the problem with the Brown campaign's representation of this Cherokee ancestry problem, when they're saying, all of a sudden they're coming out and saying that we support affirmative action in this way and we're going to protect affirmative action to only be used by appropriate people, when I think otherwise they would not be supporting this. But on the same side, when they're saying, oh, she used this to get ahead, and I think she would be the most excellent definition of this, right? Is she Cherokee? Is she not? She claims it. She doesn't. Even if she does, even if she did get the job, why does it have to be drawn down to an affirmative action issue, even if she is a person of color?
Interesting.
Well, because as you well know, I mean, affirmative action is a polarizing issue. And
absolutely,
upset,
yeah.
And, you know, it could upset some of those white working class Democrats who would say, hey, you know, look at this. Here's someone who got ahead, and she used this small portion of her identity. And whether it's fair or not, the political contest, it is fair. I mean, this stuff is all on the table and is fair for voters to decide.
Well, David, the point you make is, and even Kevin made this point, is it's on the table. Kevin's writing about it. You're writing about it. I'm talking about it. And we've got a bunch of listeners who want to get on this conversation. We've only got a few minutes left. So let me go to Mary Jane, who's calling from Duxbury. Hi, Mary Jane. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Yes. I would just like to say I used to be a financial aid director at a graduate school in Boston. And in that position, I can tell you that oftentimes students, and I know from my experience when I would apply for grants and scholarships, we would also look to the faculty applications when they were asked questions about their background, their ethnicity. And oftentimes they answered those questions not knowing necessarily how the information was to be used. But in applying for grants and scholarships, we were delighted when we could report that we had a certain number of students or faculty members that had a diverse background. In many cases, they never knew that that was going to work to the advantage of the school to get monies, but it did. And we were delighted to, and it was always a case of encouraging anyone with a diverse background to apply.
Mary Jane, so, thanks so much. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You wanted to conclude
okay.
that thought.
I think oftentimes they're done without knowing how the information is going to be used.
Yeah. Well, Mary Jane, I'm really grateful for that call. Kevin Millard, it does seem like that is one of the issues at play here. That is, there's a lot of information on the books and the records of universities here and there regarding Elizabeth Warren that she might not have even been aware of in terms of how it was going to be used.
Absolutely. And I think Mary Jane brings up a really great point, especially in the university context, when students are applying, when faculty are applying for jobs and they do list Native American ancestry. Sometimes they are listing that purposefully, right? They're saying this to get something that they would not have gotten before. So, for example, in my own tribal newsletter and in a lot of other Oklahoma tribal newsletters, you have a lot of kids from California writing in saying, thank you, Choctaw Nation. Thank you, Seminole Nation, for giving me this scholarship. I want to know more about my culture. Signed, Brittany from Beverly Hills, right? So you're looking at it, reading it, saying, Brittany from Beverly Hills, she's never been to Wewoka, Oklahoma, you know, and met the bully Patrick, you know, that everyone else had to bear as through their childhood, right? So you're wondering, what is she going to use this ancestry for, right? She wants to get a scholarship. But other, they might just list that on there as they would, I'm part Irish, I'm part German, I'm from Argentina. And this is how they are representing their identity to the world without any care or any object for that listing.
Let's try to get one more call in here. Costa is calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Costa, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I thought I'd ask first off, as I didn't know that people of Cherokee heritage were prohibited from cooking broiled herbed tomatoes or crab meat omelets. But
is that a reference? That's a reference to the Elizabeth Warren appearance in a cookbook, right?
Thing on the cookbook thing. But more seriously, I have been really offended by the hammering of this story for two reasons. First of all, I as far as I can tell, she has not concealed anything from anybody. And second of all, as somebody who has roots in this country going back all every which way, including to recent immigrants, but also to people who were early settlers in the early 18th century, I challenge anybody to find somebody with a long family history in the United States who can't choose from a whole smorgasbord of cultural, ethnic, and national identities with which to identify themselves.
So it should be, sure, it's a personal choice in this case. Costa, we take the point. Thank you for the call. Our time is running short. David Catanese, I want to come back to you and just ask you, in terms of the Brown campaign using this, you know, as a sort of political observer here and political reporter, what are the risks for them? I mean, obviously, there's a political advantage to hammer this story. But what are the risks they take, do you think?
Well, I think one of the risks we briefly touched upon is pushing too far into the, you know, whether it's a bad thing. Overplaying the subtle affirmative action card. I think that could be a potential risk. I think they have been pretty careful at saying she just has to answer the question. She just has to answer more questions now. Which now, I mean, even in the state, you've got small newspapers saying, look, she needs to answer questions. As we mentioned before, you've got liberal commentators saying she should come forth and answer more questions. Why not come out and say, yeah, I checked the box, but, you know, because I was proud of it. And
time is up. I want to thank you so much for joining us. David Catanese is a reporter from Politico.com, and Kevin Noble Millard, he's a member of the Seminole Nation in Oklahoma and associate professor of law at Syracuse University, co-editor of Loving versus Virginia in a Post-Racial World, Rethinking Race, Sex, and Marriage. That's a book that's yet to be published. Kevin Millard, thanks so much for talking to us. We appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks, David.
And listeners, the conversation continues on RadioBoston.org. What Isn't White writes, her response to the accusations, completely unsubstantiated, show that she'll be the kind of senator who prefers reality and real issues to media fabrications of race swindling. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.